Joe Sheehan joins us to talk baseball. He is, of course, the author of the Joe Sheehan newsletter. How are you, Joe? Good to talk to you, man.
Good. This is the first I'm hearing about this NFL thing. That's wild. I think teams, for the extra two games, teams should just play pickup ball. You just say the Sixers and Knicks just pick some outdoor court in, I don't know, Trenton, New Jersey or something. Just go get a run up, you know, first to 10 wins.
Knicks and Sixers go to Rucker Park now.
I like it.
You have a game.
Exactly.
That'd be awesome. Joe, first of all, before we even launch into it, tell everybody where they can get your newsletter and all the different things you do with it.
At joesheehan.com. I've been writing the newsletter now. This is my 14th season. Before that, I was with Sports Illustrated, Baseball Prospectus, Baseball America. I've written everywhere. And the newsletter is where I write about the game, on field, off field. Definitely a stat head perspective, but I like to think it's readable if you're not that into the numbers. It's a passion project for me. A couple thousand people subscribe. I'm doing it for a while now, and I really love it. So you go on there, see excerpts of everything I've done. Like the last week, I've written about Shohei Ohtani. I've written about teams that are over and underperforming. I've written about the Reds. There's a complete piece up there about, you know, this recent Reds run. You can scroll through and see that full piece for free. Subscription information is on the site as well, joesheehan.com.
And there's a Slack sort of adjunct to this as well?
There is. You know, about 5 years ago, I kind of tried to figure out how to do it. It's free. If you get the newsletter, you can actually sign up for the Slack. It's Ball Talk 24/7, 365. Hundreds of people love the game. The other thing, Gil, I should mention on here, I actually have an opt-in gaming newsletter as well, where I kind of break down the games and look ahead to the night's slate. I added that this year because a lot of people wanted that sort of content. And the people who didn't want it really didn't want it. So you can opt into it as well.
That's awesome. Okay, so one of these pieces that you just talked about is what I want to get into, because I think you framed the season, you know, from a headline standpoint really well, which is, okay, the first headline was the shortening of games, all the ways that they did that. Shohei is probably headline number two. And headline number three is, you know, you have some teams like the Padres, like the Cardinals, you know, teams that have completely underperformed who are expected to do very well in their divisions. But you take this from a standpoint of, okay, underperformers and overperformers, we do tend to somewhat exaggerate that. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, it's two things. One is that there's a natural variance to teams throughout a season that I don't think we appreciate. A team might be three wins off its pace, and we're like, oh my God, what's wrong with them? Well, they're three wins off their pace. That's just the nature of a baseball season. But the other thing is, and that's why, so if you scale down their records, you get a better sense of where they are. And I think that with these three teams we're talking about, the Padres, Cardinals, and Mets, they were the 3, 4, 5 seeds last year, and all of them are legitimately underperforming, anywhere from 7 to 11 wins off the pace we would have expected them to have. And, you know, it's not early anymore. I'm the guy who really tries to not jump to conclusions when a team is, you know, a game under 500 in the middle of May. But we're almost 90 games into the season, past July 4th, about to hit the All-Star break. And whether teams think they're better or worse than they are, the standings are going to dictate their actions over the next few weeks. It's one thing to say, hey, you know, we're not really a 35 or 51 team like Cardinals are. But if you're 12 and a half games out of the division, that's got to drive your decisions at the deadline. So for these three teams, I think we can legitimately say they're not meeting where we expected them to be. And that's got to be the focus of their choices as we hit the deadline. And the other thing is, it's funny, all three teams, it's the bullpen. These are three teams that had top 10 bullpens last year. All of them are bottom 10 this year.
It's the bullpen. I've tried to stress this when I talk about the Giants and the Giants' success, not only when they won their three World Series, but even the way they're manipulating their pitching staff. I mean, they're doing something specific this year. But the common thread of those three World Series teams, and we can talk about the Royals World Series winner as well, it was the bullpen. And the bullpen is what we as sports bettors, it's harder for us to quantify that with, you know, we watch baseball, we watch it with our eyes, we take in what we can. We can't really soak in bullpen the same way, right, as we can one individual starter or a hitter. And so I think that it is always the thing that really is the secret sauce of Major League Baseball. Now, of the teams that have overperformed outside of that five-game window or underperformed, let's take the overperformers first, because I want to ask you who you think of these teams. Which of these do you think is sustainable? So obviously the Reds are the biggest overperformer based on projection to this point. Orioles, Rangers, even the Braves, as great as we thought they'd be, are even that much more spectacular, as is the case with the Rays, Marlins, D-backs, Nationals, as you point out, largely because of defense. Which of those, I mean, obviously the Braves might be one of them, but I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Which of those teams do you think is the most sustainable, and which is the least sustainable? Which do you think is, okay, this is an outlier, it'll change?
I look at that Reds pitching staff, and I have a hard time seeing them holding up. Now, they've won four in a row. They're still getting a lot of great work out of their young players, Matt McClain and Ellie De La Cruz, the guys they've called up this year, Spencer Steer. But when you look at that rotation, you know, Andrew Abbott was very good his last time out. Some underlying numbers that aren't so great. But you're talking about a team that's trying to get it done with Luke Weaver, with the occasional bullpen game. They've got to get Hunter Green back. They've got to get Nick Lodolo back. Right now, they're hoping for early August for both. But even then, I don't think this rotation, and really the bullpen behind Alexis Diaz, is going to be good enough to hold on. So I think the Reds have the most collapse risk of these teams. You look at the Orioles, though, you know, similar issues with the questions about the pitching staff, but two true dominant relievers at the back end with Bautista and Cano. So when they've been shortening games to seven innings, and they keep bringing up talent. Just this week, they called up Jordan Westberg, who's in one of their top infield prospects. They've gotten it done this year with Rutschman and Henderson. Joey Ortiz has been up a few times, and they've got guys coming up behind them. Colton Cowser's an outfielder who just got called up. Heston Kerstad will be up soon, and eventually Jackson Holliday. So this is a team that has a lot of talent to bring up to the major leagues. And as we'll see over the next few weeks, a lot of talent that can be used in trade to improve that pitching staff.
Same question then for the big underperformers, which are the Royals, the Padres, the White Sox, the Cardinals, the Mets, and the Athletics. So the teams you've already mentioned, and then the real, the real bottom of the barrel teams in the Royals and the Athletics.
Yeah, I'm finally off the Cardinals. I pretty much insisted until the ninth inning last night. Cardinals could still make a run in the bad NL Central, and I'm pretty much giving up at this point. Again, the bullpen's undercut a lot of what they've done.
Yeah. Me too, man.
But I think the Padres are dangerous. Now, not maybe catch the Diamondbacks dangerous, but I think they're going to find their way into the postseason. If you look at their numbers this year, you know, a lot of it is hitting with runners in scoring position, which isn't a skill apart from hitting. So that's the kind of thing we would expect to regress over the last 70 games of the season. You look at the raw talent at the top of that lineup, we can expect Machado and Bogarts to finally get healthy and hit better than they have. And I think that bullpen, which again, I mentioned earlier, has been bad. You look at getting healthy, Luis Garcia getting healthy. You look at what they have in Steven Wilson and Nick Martinez. I think once they get their core guys in front of Josh Hader, they're going to be fine. So yeah, I like the Padres to make a run.
Yeah, and if they do make the run, it will probably, the mainstream media narrative will probably be the hitters coming to life or something, but it will probably be the bullpen that will make the biggest difference. Last thing, because we only have 45 seconds here. Shohei, my instinct is no matter what, they're not going to part. The Angels are not going to part with Shohei. What is yours?
I'm with you, Gil, and I've been with you for over a year now. The Angels need to win to have any hope of retaining Shohei Ohtani, and that's always been their goal. They don't have a good enough farm system to go into a rebuild. They certainly don't have a good enough base talent to say, hey, look, we can get rid of it. We can trade Shohei and be back next year. They have to try to win this year to convince him that he can be on a winning team in Anaheim. So no matter what, even with the Trout injury, Rendon, I don't see them trading Shohei Ohtani.
I completely agree with that. We will see. Time will tell for sure. Joe, always a pleasure. Let's do this more.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Joe Sheehan, everybody, on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the house, and so too is Chris Felica from Fox Sports, who joins us now. You may know him as the Bear, on his way to faraway places. Where are you headed?
First of all, like crack, I'm mad. Because I missed the split and bets yell, first of
you
all.
Did. You did.
And then I missed this morning, because you're talking about the Wimbledon schedule.
Yeah.
I was going to play Buzkova versus Annette Contave, because she wasn't going to win in that match.
And you didn't even play it?
The time schedule got all screwed up, and of course, Buzkova won very easily.
It has sort of thrown this tournament out of whack.
But I'm going to LA after this for the football meetings at Fox.
Nice.
And this weekend we have Gold Cup soccer shows that I will be a part of Saturday and Sunday. U.S. playing, Mexico playing, which will be fun. And then a week from tomorrow, I head to Australia for the Women's World Cup for about 6 weeks.
6 weeks for the Women's World Cup.
Yep.
Wow.
Looking forward to it.
Wow.
That will leave Antarctica as the only continent I will not have been to.
Really?
Yes.
Do you plan on going to Antarctica or Antarctica?
I would love
to,
actually. There are a bunch of cruises you can do down there now.
Yeah.
I know a buddy of mine and his wife recently did one and loved it.
They did?
Yes.
Okay.
So
they did
the polar dive into the
would you do that?
That's tough. I don't know if I could do that. I could do the swimming with the shark in the shark cage off of South Africa. I could do that, but that's asking a lot.
I make you a -300 favorite to go to Antarctica. You seem like adventurous.
I would love to. Yeah. The problem is most of the cruises from my brief investigation are the same, like in the early part of the year, like February, and that's usually like beach time. So I don't. That might be a hard sell with the missus.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I'd be with the missus on that one. So you're going to do the World Cup in Australia, which is primarily in Sydney, but the U.S. women's team plays a couple games.
Yeah, I believe all of the U.S.'s women's games, except for the final and one of their group stage matches, would potentially be in New Zealand.
In New Zealand.
So I think two of the three group stage matches are in New Zealand, and then each of their knockout round matches would be in New Zealand until the final as well.
Do you have a World Cup pick already?
I don't. I'm going to continue to look at the prices. Even despite all of the injuries that the U.S. has, they're still the best team. I think Germany is on the other side of the bracket. They're probably the team most likely to emerge from the other side. But then you got teams like France. You don't know what the heck is going to happen with them with the coaching change and everything that's gone on with their roster. England has been decimated by injuries more so than the United States, so they probably aren't to the caliber still of U.S. and Germany. So if I had to guess, it will probably be either U.S. or Germany that winds up winning this thing.
And for those who are interested in these kinds of things, and I know I am, what will your role be in the coverage?
That's a great question. I am assuming.
Oh.
I mean, I'm going to probably find out more about that this weekend.
Okay.
But I will assume that I'm going to be part of the coverage from the set. We're offering picks and advice and maybe blurting out something like, yeah, I like Vietnam plus 4.5 goals against the U.S. in this group stage match, something like that. And I think I'm going to do a daily social type deal as well, either on
– Sweet.
By the way, I haven't logged into Facebook in like 4 years. Now I have to sign up for Threads.
Yes. We got another one.
It's the fever.
Ain't happened. I'm not even on TikTok yet, but I've been told by my producer out there that I kind of need to sign up for TikTok now.
I mean, you haven't like thumbed through TikTok videos in your life?
Not at all.
Wow. Okay.
I'm get off my lawn guy.
They'll get to you eventually. Wait, so then same question for college football coverage for Fox this fall. Will you assume your similar role that you had at ESPN?
Yes. I don't think we're going to do the exact same thing. Here's a board. Here's me sitting up. But yeah, there will be a... Yes, I'll be a significant part of their coverage.
By the way, I'm totally expecting you to say Vietnam plus 4.5 goals.
As example, knowing that they're in the group.
Okay, so football, you're going to assume the classic bear role on the Fox college set. And you have a few college football season win totals that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I put out a couple out there that we've talked about already.
Okay.
And I put a couple more that I wound up playing. And these are I always find value with the under. Before the year, everybody thinks their team is going to be great. Everybody thinks their team is going to win every game. And in Notre Dame, I think there might have been some nines out there, but now the best number I could find was 8.5, and I went under 8.5 even still.
Wow.
I
mean,
you look, they've got Ohio State, they've got Clemson, they've got USC. Maybe they pull one of those upsets.
Maybe.
But still, look at them last year. They had two of the worst losses in the country last year, losing to Marshall and what was the other and Stanford, who was terrible in the Pac-12. So this is a team that you can look at it both ways. Hey, they had two terrible. There is no way they're going to lose games like that again. Or they're capable of losing to anybody. Yes, their quarterback position will be more solidified with Sam Hartman, but you lose Michael Mayer, and then you've got those games like NC State and Louisville.
Those could be losses, too.
It could be losses, too. So I thought under 8.5 with Notre Dame was a
good play. You've sold me. Why do you think it's that high? Just because of Notre Dame?
Because it's Notre Dame, and you think year two of Marcus Freeman. Remember, their coaching staff was kind of overhauled, too, with offensive Tommy Reese gone, the offensive line coach is gone. So I think there's some things to work through there in South Bend.
Where do you stand on Marcus Freeman, by the way?
I think he was in the right place at the right time and the administration. I don't think the administration there wanted to do a major coaching search after BK left for South Bend. And the fact that Marcus was there as a coordinator, it was like, okay, let's just hire him and move on.
And the kids wanted him.
Yes, I'll put it to you this way.
Yeah.
If Cincinnati were not in the college football playoff that year, Luke Fickell would be the head coach of Notre Dame.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
But I hope he does well because it's always love to see former players who were really good college players invest in becoming a coach and kind of blaze a path. But we'll see. I hope he does well.
Where do you, because I remember at the time, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm misquoting you, but I remember you saying it usually doesn't work
out well.
When the kids
look at, I mean, I'm really dating myself here, but look what Carl Torbush, when Mack Brown left North Carolina.
Yeah.
And, oh, we're going to bring in Carl Torbush. He's a player's coach.
Yeah.
That didn't go well. Look at Bill Stewart at West Virginia when Rich Rod left for Michigan, and they wound up blowing out Oklahoma in that bowl. Oh, Bill Stewart's already, and that didn't go well. So, like, a lot of times these types of moves don't necessarily pan out. So hopefully this will be an example of where it does.
Brief aside here, and this will not be part of the season win totals discussion, but Notre Dame under is. We'll get to the other season win totals after the break. But you mentioned Luke Fickell. How do you stand on Luke Fickell?
I think Wisconsin is a clear favorite in the whatever they're calling it now, the Big Ten West. I think we did away with leaders and legends.
Leaders and legends was always the best.
You finally have a quarterback now, and Tanner Mordecai is going to revolutionize that offense. I like what Luke has done there. I think if you look at that schedule, I think they are in a good position in that West, and I would be very surprised if they were not in the Big Ten championship game against Ohio State or Michigan.
A nightmarish coach at times for Cincinnati when it came to in-game betting or even pre-flop betting when it came to totals or spreads.
Goal line situations. Yeah. We're gonna run it up here or not.
I'm guessing that doesn't change from his profile.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys, I think, that kind of has that Midwest kind of chip. I'm gonna puff out my chest and show you kind of deal.
Stop us, then you stop us.
But I was happy to see Luke grab a big-time job because, like I said, he was in the terrible situation of achieving an unbelievable goal at Cincinnati, getting a Group of Five team to the college football playoff, and at that same time, USC opened up, Notre Dame opened up, Oklahoma opened up, all these unbelievable blue-chip college football jobs opened up, and he's like, I can't leave my kids, so I just took to the college football playoff. We're about to play Alabama in the semifinal. I can't leave them for these jobs now. So I'm glad he wound up getting a really good Big Ten job.
Do you find with your job that, and I don't know, maybe I'm mischaracterizing this, but you must have enough interaction with certain coaches that you tend to, you know, you're inevitably going to, just like you like with any people, you're going to like some, you're going to not like some as much. Do you ever sort of internalize that where you're like, oh, I can't let that influence me?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
And I will, full disclosure, I have a great relationship with Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
And I have since he's been at Oregon. And there are a lot of times where, I mean, we don't, like, during the season, it's great because we never really talk about, like, anything other than just good luck, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I always have to kind of make a decision, like, all because I like Chip doesn't mean I'm going to lay seven and a half points against Oregon State or whatever.
As soon as he turns the corner, you're fading him.
But I will tell you this: when I do pick them or against them on the board, I always get a little or a little like, oh, he's watching. They're watching.
He's watching.
He's paying attention.
Oh, I thought we had a lovely discussion
exactly.
there, Bear. Apparently not. A couple more season win totals in college football that Chris Felica has added. We'll get to those. Namely, UW and UAB, University of Washington and Alabama Birmingham. He's got thoughts on those two schools. That's on the other side. And what else is he betting these days? Fox Sports' Chris Felica on his way for some meetings in L.A., both on the football season and the Women's World Cup. That's next. Numbers Game Beast of the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points. You can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. And if you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Gil Alexander hanging out with Chris Felica, the Bear, from Fox Sports. Watching a little tennis on the TV screen here.
Danielle freaking Collins serving for the set.
Danielle freaking Collins serving for the first set against Belinda Bencic. Sloan Stephens won her first set in her match. Brody up a break in the fifth set. Yes, in the fifth set against Casper Ruud. I believe Drew Dinsick had Brody plus the games, right?
Yeah. Yep. He was on there.
I think so. The only way he loses that now is if Ruud just wins every other game, I think. You have a tennis bet.
I like his position. Yeah. Tomorrow I do. I looked at I laid Alexander over to win straight sets against Madison Brangle. I just don't think that's a good match. I know Brangle won the hard court match last year against him, but I think the way Alexander always plays on grass, I think her game kind of suits it much more so than Brangle, who tends to just want to, with the weaker serve, she wants to get you into some long rallies. I just don't think that's going to be that type of match. So it was, I laid a 120 with Alexandrova to beat Madison Brangle in straight sets tomorrow.
Don't hate that bet at all. Brangle, a player who historically has a very poor serve and a very good return game. So Alexandrova, clearly the better grass court numbers.
And the other thing that I did should add now, unfortunately, I hate saying the price is going to be gone. But after Sofia Kenin just hit Coco Gauff off the court in the first round, I played her at 25-1 to win Wimbledon.
And did
she,
you really?
She won again today in convincing fashion. Like, she's an Aegis quarter. So, like, you could probably still get a decent price on her to win the quarter. Like, remember, you might be aware that she's won a Grand Slam tournament.
I believe we had her. Yeah. I believe we had her at the Australian Open.
So you know that she has the level to play with a player like Iga. And, like, I think that would potentially be the quarterfinal match they would meet. So you could probably get a better price on Iga against Kenin. Maybe you can play your way and guarantee yourself a profit if you want. Yeah. But I don't know what the price is to win the quarter. But I thought after watching that match, I was like, damn, she's in great form right now when she backed it up today.
That Kenin golf match might have been the best match of this tournament.
Fantastic.
So far. Yeah. Let's put it this way. If Kenin played Swiatek, she wouldn't mentally cave, that's for
sure.
That would not happen. Okay, back to college football. We brought up, obviously, you like the Notre Dame under. You also like a position on UW.
Yeah, I do. I was very high on the Huskies last year. I had them over, and it was a no-sweat win. And a lot of times, the teams that kind of emerge from nowhere with the first-year head coach last year and panics coming in, like the expectations the following year are super, super high, as they are this year. So remember, this is a team last year in Washington that I think they beat Cal, Oregon, and Oregon State. They beat them by a combined 13 points, and that took superhuman performances from Penix to do that. They lose Colorado, they lose UCLA on the schedule, and they pick up USC and Utah. That's a net negative. Mm-hmm. So again, 9.5, it's going to take 10 to beat me with a defense that really needs to improve, or else Penix is going to have to go crazy in order to carry them again. I don't know. If they go 10-2, congratulations, you beat me, but I'll play under with Washington 9.5.
Well, so the under then totally takes this question off the table, which is going to be, because we were talking about, you know, betting NFL Coach of the Year by proxy yesterday. You know, Mike, if you like Pittsburgh, maybe just play Mike Tomlin Coach of the Year, 25-1, that sort of thing. We've done it in the past. We've talked about it in the past. So there's a lot of people who like Penix for the Heisman. So you're clearly not one of those people then.
Hey, look, maybe that's a way to play it instead of playing a win total or them to win the Pac-12. Because the Heisman's going to be an interesting bet this year because, again, we talked about it earlier with Nikola Jokic and we talked about it with Patrick Mahomes with the NFL Awards. Is there going to be, will the Heisman voters put Caleb Williams in the stratosphere with Archie Griffin, the only player to win two Heismans?
That's right.
Like, are they going to vote for him again if Penix has a great year or if Quinn Ewers has a great, whomever, club dick at Clemson, name the player. So there might be a situation where it's like, yeah, let's give it to someone else. He got his Heisman already. So it might be inclined to not play Caleb Williams? Because, I mean, look, Johnny Manziel had an unbelievable year.
He did.
The year after he won, I mean, in some ways better than the year that he won the Heisman. They didn't give it to him then. So
because this is the follow-up question to that would be like, you know, the difference between an NBA MVP vote versus the Heisman. There's 1,000 people of Heisman votes, right?
Way too many people.
Way too many people.
I'm not one of them.
And you're not one of them. That was my next question.
Which is fine.
So, yeah, Kelly's losing.
Not fine.
Yeah, everybody has a Heisman vote. He doesn't have. Chris Felica doesn't have a Heisman vote. So that the question was going to be, would a group of 1,000 voters be less inclined to care about the historical significance of the Archie Griffin back-to-back? And I guess we already established with the Manziel thing, actually, they might be.
Right. I think so, too. But also, when you have such a large group of voters, I think kind of each individual vote is marginalized.
Yes.
They don't matter as much. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I mean, can he put up the type of numbers that he did last year? I mean, you lose Addison at wide receiver, but they should be better on the defensive side of the ball, and maybe he won't have to account for 400 and whatever yards total offense every game and 5 touchdowns.
One more aside before we get to UAB. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Addison. Who do you think will be the best rookie wideout in the NFL of a great class?
I think Quentin Johnston. This year, I think Quentin Johnston's
really?
Going to have the best year. Yes.
Wow.
I think he's in the best spot with that offense, with Eckler in the backfield, and like I said, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who can't necessarily stay on the field. I think he's going to get a lot of targets this year.
Okay.
Almost at San Diego.
Not mentioned Jackson Smith and Jigba. Not mentioned.
Oh, yeah. No, he will have a great role as well. But I think Johnson has a big play factor that maybe Smith and Jigba in the position, in the situation that he is in his rookie year, might not.
All right, UAB to close it out.
Yeah, everybody's talked about Deion Sanders in Colorado and that coaching move, but not as many people have talked about, like, Trent Dilfer is the coach at UAB. Like, is this going to work? The guy coached high school, and now you're at a team that struggled last year to get to 6 wins in their final game of the regular season to get to a bowl game. Bill Clark steps away, who built that program from scratch, was clearly one of the best Group of 5 coaches, and you lose Dwayne McBride, who was far and away your best offensive player, the running back who got drafted. You lose your entire offensive line. You lose a massive amount of players on the defensive side of the ball. You're in a new league, which, again, the American kind of took a bunch of teams from Conference USA, so maybe the American isn't the American like we thought it was, but they still have to go to Tulane, I believe. They got to go to Georgia. They got a couple of other games, UTSA they have to go to. Like, there are a bunch of games on that schedule that I don't think they can win. Their season win total is 5.5. I'd be surprised if they got to 6. So I'm under 5.5 in UAB year one.
UAB under 5.5. By the way, I love Trent Dilfer when he was on ESPN.
Yes, Trent.
Trent was great.
Trent did some of the best analysis tapes, the VOs, Telestrator of anybody out there. And again, a guy that I ran into him out here for the Vegas Bowl like a few years ago as well. And it was great to see him. I hadn't seen him since he had left ESPN. But another guy that I'm rooting for. He's a football junkie, and obviously his connections with the Elite 11 brought in Chris Mortensen's son to be one of his coordinators as well.
Oh, sweet.
He was an analyst at Alabama. So, again, I hope he ultimately does well, but I think this year is going to be a little bit of a transition year with the roster and the conference.
Hope he's not listening, because you'll get a So under 5.5 on UAB, under 9.5 UW,
yep.
And under 8.5 was Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell us, you're going to do. Are you allowed to talk about what you're going to do podcast wise?
Yeah, people have been asking.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'm going to have a weekly podcast for college football, a weekly podcast for the NFL. So we're going to do 2 shows a week, and they're going to be digital shows. So you'll unfortunately have to look at my ugly face if you want.
Yes.
Along with a crew yet to be determined who's going to join me each week, if it's going to be a set person, if it's going to be rotating guests, there are going to be segments where I have different people on to kind of have a little unique kind of segment and kind of a betting kind of roundtable type deal. So, but yeah, they'll be
guest roundtable. Yeah. Where have I heard that before?
We'll
That's a good format.
Everyone steals your ideas. So we need to do it as well.
Good format.
But yeah, no, we'll have 2 shows a week, 1 college, 1 NFL. looking forward to it.
And are you excited for your deep dive into the NFL? Because that's not what we know you for.
I am, because it's funny. Last year when I did the Amazon stuff with Kirk on Thursday nights, I wasn't sure. Like, my travels in college, I'd get back middle of the day on a Sunday, and I'd be so tired I just want to go to sleep. And normally I'd watch the 4 o'clock starts in the NFL and then the Sunday night and Monday night. But I, being in the truck for the NFL games last year and just seeing the level of play there and the execution, the crispness, and how quick the game went as opposed to college, I'm excited to be diving in more than the NFL.
Good for you, man.
I mean, I grew up on the NFL. I had Jet season tickets for 30 years. I paid my dues.
My condolences. good for you. Good things happening to great people. We're very happy for you. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy.